I want to broaden out the market conversation here too, as of course we have been watching, as I said, the weakest consumer confidence number that we've seen since February. Surprising some people there when you dig into maybe some of the reasons as to why we saw that dip down to 113.8. That was revised lower than the 125.1 reading we got in July. A few different factors. I mean, we've been talking about a lot of them for a while here, especially the COVID rise across the U.S., an increase in hospitalizations there, but also rising gas and food prices. And for more on all of that, I want to bring on Matt Misk and John Hancock, investment management co-chief investment strategist, joins us right now. And Matt, of course, you know, as we learned last year, you know, the underlying economy and the markets can be detached. So, you know, just kind of quick caveat there. But it is important in thinking about this recovery, what that confidence number maybe says about where we're at. So, I mean, when you dig into softer economic data we've been getting right now, I mean, what does it say to you?
Yeah, August data overall has been disappointing. There's no way of sugarcoating that, whether it's consumer sentiment, manufacturing data, business surveys, across the board, really. August has been a tough month. And it's, you know, a lot of it is Delta driven and really a flare up of COVID again. But what we're seeing is the Fed is pivoting. And you just talked about this with Jackson Hole. But the Fed was more hawkish at the June meeting. And over the summer, you just heard more and more FOMC members talk about tapering and wanting to raise rates. And we really think that's going to be pulled back here post this Jackson Hole meeting, and meaning that bad news may be actually good news as it relates to economic data because it pushes out Fed hiking. And the longer the Fed is on the sidelines, the longer this cycle likely lasts. And that's one of the reasons why the market probably is taking some of this worse than expected economic data in stride.
Yeah, and I mean, it doesn't look like it's expected to really stop when we get the jobs report on Friday. Looking at your jobs estimate, 740,000, that is, and, you know, that's going to be a step down here in terms of what we've seen. I mean, when you think about the recovery here and maybe some of that happening, it does remind me of, you know, what we saw play out before when the market started to rebound before the economic data started to prove that we were recovering. I mean, when you project out, if we are expecting maybe a bit more dovish tone from the Fed, how does that maybe change your investment thesis among growth and cyclicals in the year or 2 years out?
Yeah, so the value run has been pretty impressive given that interest rates have stalled out. And, you know, you talked about financials being one of the best, being the best performer in August, even though rates haven't really gone much higher. You know, I think that shows some strength in the underlying earnings ability of the financial sector, whether it's M&A, whether it's the IPOs, whether it's all that, you know, other places that they can make money instead of net interest margins. But as we look out into 2022, we would lean more into the quality factor. And the quality factor is one that screens on things like return on equity, margins, better balance sheets. From here, it's going to be harder to just have beta do all the work for you in terms of cyclicality. We're going to have to find the companies that run better businesses that become the industry leaders into next year, because you're not going to just get a tide that lifts all ships. So it's going to be, you know, an active management type environment. It's going to be one where you got to be more selective on the cyclical side, and we would look for quality growth to gain more traction into next year.
I mean, when you look at those, it had been maybe some of those sectors that people were leaning in on in that rotation, as I said, into cyclicals, the ones that had been beaten down because they were expecting a strong bounce back. I would think about maybe the cruise lines as an example there, the airlines catching a boost as well in the hope that travel would come back. But we've seen fits, stops and starts around those names. So, I mean, if you're looking ahead, maybe when you dig a little bit deeper into which companies might be able to, you know, as you said, beat the tide here, which ones are you looking at?
So the industrial space more broadly is a place we would look, and aerospace and defense is a part of that. You know, what we're seeing is in industrials, you're seeing just good global growth demand. You're seeing shipping that has a lot of demand and prices are going up. If you're the shipper, you know, and you're able to increase prices, that's a good thing for you. And so industrials is the one place we would look at. Industrials as a sector has some of the highest return on equity and quality metrics out of all the cyclicals, whether it's energy, financials, et cetera. And CapEx is still likely to improve over the next 12 months, even though it might, as you said, fits and starts as it relates to that CapEx recovery story. So industrial is the place we would go. We would look at some of the conglomerates, some of the mid-cap industrial companies. And, you know, we do have infrastructure as a potential catalyst for some industrial companies as well, whether it's aggregates, cranes, you know, those that are helping build these bridges, roads, etc. So that's some of the pockets of opportunity on the cyclical side we would take advantage of.
All right, Matt Miskin, I appreciate you coming on here to chat with us today. John Hancock, Investment Management Co-Chief Investment Strategist, thanks again for the time.